this is a hard lesson to learn, that it is okay to take a leap of faith. And so many people are afraid of failing. And believe me, I was afraid of failing. What do I do? And then I learned, you can fail. It's okay, because you can always get back up.
Welcome to the Animal Academy podcast. I'm Allison White, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in the human-animal connection. This podcast will showcase professionals who share their areas of expertise in an ongoing series of interviews, and you are there. Their input, stories, and knowledge will help us all understand that we are the ones that actually end up learning from the animals. This is the Animal Academy Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Animal Academy Podcast. I'm excited to speak with my guest, Kelly Brownfield. Several years ago, I met Kelly and her Great Dane Bandit at a Pet Lovers Coalition lunch program that was sponsored by Nestle Purina Pet Care Company. Kelly was a speaker, and it introduced me to Bandit, and I did a presentation on compassion fatigue. I enjoyed meeting them and think you will enjoy hearing about Kelly's journey and the important work she does with the help of her dogs as part of the USO Comfort Dog Program. Welcome to the program, Kelly.
Thank you for having me, Allison. Good to be able to talk to you again.
It has been several years, and I follow you on social media, and you do some very exciting things. And I thought, you know, I need to talk to Kelly about some of these things. You have a very interesting background. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you get started in the field?
You know, I think it all starts with, I'm a proud military brat. Mm-hmm. Born in South Carolina, but grew up overseas, being, you know, part of a military family, and just gave me a very eclectic background, meeting lots of people. But of course, when it deals with animals, I'm also a big animal lover. Uh-huh. There was never a time we didn't have an animal in the house. And I think from the time I can remember, my parents always knew I'd do something in the field down the road involving animals.
Isn't that interesting how it starts so early?
Yeah. You know, it all started with the USO of Missouri and having that leadership behind you that lets you, I don't want to say do what you want to do, but lets you try out things. And you know, it's okay to see if what, you know, what works, what doesn't. And I truly believe it was having that leadership in place that helped create the USO of Missouri Comfort Dog Program. And it was all created for our troops, basically.
That's wonderful. So you kind of going back a little bit, because you've got a whole lot to talk about the USO of Missouri. You've got a lot of great stories. So you grew up overseas, right?
Yes, I loved every bit of it.
Where did you live?
You know, we lived all over Central Europe mostly. I believe I moved 9 different times throughout that time. But actually, I would call Heidelberg, Germany, my home, actually.
Really?
Over there. But, you know, now I'm proud to say Missouri is my home. But I spent so much time in Heidelberg, and that's where I graduated from. Actually, my mother still lives over there. I just love being able to go visit, diverse environment to grow up in. And I absolutely loved every bit of it.
So you had a lot of great experiences.
Yes. Yes.
So you had different types of dogs when you grew up, or what kind of dogs did you have?
Oh, I think my very first dog, and you're going to laugh, was actually named Bandit. It was a mutt rescued from the South Carolina Humane Society before we moved to Germany. And then we also had a rescue, and I believe she was an Irish Setter Golden Retriever mix named Morgan. And okay. Morgan was through with me all the way up until 15 or 16 years old. Morgan was by my side. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, Bandit, the first generation Bandit. Mm-hmm. When we moved to Germany, we had to give him away, but we gave him away to our neighbor who absolutely loved him.
Oh.
And I really felt like he was there. We'd always get letters about him. Now, this was before, you know, the fanciness of cell phones and emails. Mm-hmm. We'd always get letters from him going, you know, he's doing great. He's out on the sailboat with me. So he lived his best life. I think he enjoyed, you know, getting adopted by our neighbor and living his life out on the ocean.
Oh, that, what a life.
I know. I want that life sometimes.
Yeah. But I bet that was hard for you as a child.
As a child, yes. That was very hard. You know, that was my first pet. But also that's an introduction sometimes to military life that's really hard to grasp sometimes as a young child. You know, there's a lot of changes. There's a lot of restrictions when traveling with pets. And I believe I use these pets now to educate even the younger military coming in. You know, they see our Great Danes at the USO and they're like, oh, I want that. And I'm like, you know, I'm so glad you love this breed just as much as I do. Mm-hmm. But there's a few things you need to know and be prepared for. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost, the travel, not all airlines will fly them all year mm-hmm. round. And just the cost alone.
It's another person.
It's a few people, if you yeah. ask me in this house.
So you said that you took a huge leap of faith. And that's when you left everything and moved to Missouri. What was that like for you and what made you move?
You know, it was very hard for me. When I left and graduated Germany, I went back to South Carolina to go to Winthrop University. And after Winthrop, I actually got involved within the Alzheimer's field. And I absolutely mm-hmm. loved it. I spent almost 10 years working within the Alzheimer's field. And it can be draining, as most people know. Mm-hmm. And it was during a time when there's a lot of cuts. And one thing my parents always taught me is be prepared. You never know what's going to happen. Have your savings, you know, do what you need to, but always be prepared. And there came a time where I had to make that decision to leave a company. And my dad, I remember talking to him and I said, I'm just so burnt out. And he said, well, maybe you should have moved to Missouri. And I just remember thinking, really? South Carolina? You want me to come to Missouri? I had no clue about anything about Missouri. But you know what? He talked me into it. At the time, I had my black lab named Mercury. Mm-hmm. I sold almost anything I had in the house and fit everything I could in my, I believe I had a Honda Accord at the time. And left on New Year's Eve. And drove to Missouri. And the first thing I remember is leaving and it being 70 degrees, beautiful in South Carolina, and getting to Missouri. And it was like 15 below. It was that one winter.
Oh my goodness.
It really snowed. And I said, what have I done? What have I done? And I think my dad chuckled. He's like, do you have a thicker coat? And I think the first thing I did was go and get a coat when I moved to Missouri. And then it didn't help that the next day we drove to Iowa to go see my grandfather, and it was even colder.
Oh,
so
no.
It had me questioning what I did, but I think ultimately sometimes it takes that leap of faith to get where you're intended to be. You know, sometimes you can't be afraid of taking those steps or leaps, as I would call that one. You know, it took a lot of family talking me into it. I was like, you guys are crazy. You know, I had no job signed up. I had no job prospects here, nothing. And, you know, I just believed in my family and said, okay, you guys think I can do it? I can do it. You know, best choice I ever made in my life because it led me to the USO, led me to my beautiful babies here, all these mm-hmm. lovely Great Danes who are running uh-huh. around the house right now. So if you hear the click of their paws and their little nails, it is them running circles right now.
Loving life, I'm sure.
Loving life and spoiled.
So you said something that's really important is that, you know, the leap of faith, you know, if you are, I'll just say in general, if any of us don't take a risk, we miss out on so much.
I truly believe that because I sometimes look back and go, what would my life have been if I didn't take that leap? I really think, and this is a hard lesson to learn, that it is okay to take a leap of faith. And so many people are afraid of failing. And believe me, I was afraid of failing. What do I do? And then I learned you can fail. It's okay because you can always get back up. Especially, mm-hmm. you know, I was lucky enough to have an amazing support system around me. But I think a lot of that attitude has, you know, has to do with growing up within the military life. We're always used to getting up, moving on to the next step. Mm-hmm. You know, every year you get to know your friends. And then the next year, guess what? You're moving, mm-hmm. you know, and it was always hard to do that. And so I think having that military background get me ready for those real steps in life. And I think packing up the car, selling everything I had, leaving, I want to say all my stable friends behind because, mm-hmm. you know, overseas, I was moving every year and I was actually in one place for 10 years. How did that happen? You know, so I was giving that up and moving. And, you know, people just know it is hard, but you can do it.
Well, I love that, Kelly. I think that that's something that has been difficult for me in the past, especially with work situations, is taking that risk. But there's a certain level of discomfort. And when that gets to be too much, that kind of pushes me to make that change that I need to make.
Absolutely. I feel exactly like you. And I was in that position where I needed to make a decision, not only, you know, for myself, but even my mental health. I needed that change, and it did wonders.
So you then became employed by the USO of Missouri.
Yes, I was lucky enough. My father, who worked at Fort Leonard Wood, you know, he said, hey, the best way to get a job on post is to volunteer. So I started volunteering all around post, and it was meant to be. I honestly will have to say, I ran into someone who said, oh, do you know the USO is hiring? And I said, no, are you serious? Now, when you're a military brat, you realize the USO, you know the USO. The USO is that home away from home. You know, I grew up traveling all over the world, but when you saw that USO sign in an airport, I knew I could go in there and be safe, take a nap, have a cup of hot chocolate or tea, whatever it might have been. And I always thought, wow, it would be neat to have a job with the USO. And I didn't even know at the time there was a USO on Fort Leonard Wood. So I went and applied, and it was for a part-time position, but it was perfect. You know, what I needed to get my feet wet. So I interviewed, and the next week I was informed that you got the job. So yes, I started off in, let's see, March of 2009 as their operations coordinator part-time.
Wonderful.
And that's how I got my foot in the door.
Well, that's a great way to do it too. And so you started part-time, you were the operations coordinator, and then you got promoted.
Yes, about a year and a half to 2 years later, my boss at the time was actually, her husband was retiring from the military and they were going to move out to Iowa. And she said, you know, from what I've seen, I think you can do this position. And I would love to, if they trust me to do it. So 2011, I took on the position of the facility director for the USO in Missouri, Fort Leonard Wood. And I absolutely loved it. It was that full-time status, that stability that really just brought everything together. It just gave us a chance to grow and to create some programming that I've been dying to do for years.
Now, did any of those programming involve dogs?
No, not at the time.
Okay.
But as I was telling you, I did move to Missouri with a beautiful black lab. So every once in a while, I'd bring her to work on those long days. And we would just see how the soldiers react. And at the time, there was no dog program in place, no therapy dog program. The Red Cross on Fort Leonard Wood did have a small therapy dog program at the hospital, but nothing I could take part in because Mercury wasn't certified. She was a little older. So it was another thing on my radar, like, what can we do to better the troops at Fort Leonard Wood? And it just came around with the introduction of Bandit. It just, everything, all the pieces came together to form this program we never knew would get so big and go beyond Missouri lines, basically.
So this is the second Bandit. Is this Bandit number two? Okay.
Bandit number two.
You know, I met Bandit and I was so impressed with the story behind, you know, how you got Bandit and, you know, his love for what he does. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, I've always wanted Great Danes for as long as I remember. I actually remember being in Germany, and in Germany, there's a lot of what they call Volksmarch, and it's like a weekend walk, basically. And I always remember seeing Great Danes. I said, one day I want a Great Dane. And I held on to that for years. And at the time, I was dating someone, and we were looking at these Great Dane rescues, and we came across this ad for these rescues. And we went and met them. Didn't hear anything back. It took some while. And then a tornado hit the Springfield, Buffalo, Missouri area. And we reached out again going, we just hope you're okay. How are the pups? You know, I'm always worried about the animals. I know there's a lot of people out there. Like, I'm always worried about the animals. And she responded going, you know, really thank you for reaching out to us. We'd love to meet you guys. We went up and met all these Great Danes. And how are you supposed to pick one? And I actually fell in love with one called, I named Duke, which is actually Bandit's brother, and adopted him, took him home. And I was following the guidelines of, you have to have the dog's shots within so many days. You got to see our vet in so many days. So a couple days later, I was up at the vet, and this gentleman was walking in with another dog that I recognized. I said, "Oh, you must have got a dog from the same group." And he's like, "Nope, we're here to put the dog down." And I was like, "Whoa, no. And it was the dog. It was actually Duke's brother. And he had grown a large lump on his throat that they didn't think they had the resources to cover. And I said, "Sir, if you plan on putting him down, would you just give him to me?" He gave me Bandit, or of course his name wasn't Bandit at the time, and said, "You can have this dog," and just turned around and walked out. So the funniest thing out of that story is coming home with two dogs all of a sudden. And I just remember my boyfriend at the time going, "Explain this. You went up with one and you came back with two." I was like, "It's like magic, they multiply." And I almost think that's where Bandit's legacy started. Because from that day, he was scheduled to be put down within 15 minutes of being there. And that's where that legacy started. Wow. Because I had long hours at the USO. My executive director at the time, Kathy O'Connor, said, "Bring them in. You can bring them to the USO. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend who I did not know at the time worked with therapy dogs, Susan Hinkle. And she was watching Bandit and she said, "Do you know Bandit has something special?" I said, "Well, I know he's cute." And she's like, "No, watch him." We found him in the corner on the lap of a soldier just crying.
Oh.
And I was like, wow. Now, Duke just loved to play and was a goofball. But Bandit actually had the ability, even at 15, 16 weeks old, to target those that needed him emotionally. And he would just put himself right in front of them. There was no ignoring him. And so that's when I learned more about therapy dogs. And that's when we started the track of what do we do to register or certify or train. At the time I knew nothing. And now, that's part mostly my job, I feel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what did you do? Did he become a service dog or therapy dog or what?
Well, I started the initial obedience training, but I actually, Susan was with Alliance of Therapy Dogs. So we started to look into what they were about, making sure it was an organization we wanted to be with as a USO. And it seemed like it fit everything. So we started training. I actually had a local friend in the area that trained service dogs, but not therapy dogs. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to do a little bit extra with him, not just therapy. So she helped us with a lot of the training. And with Alliance of Therapy Dogs, you cannot train or test them until they hit a year. So I'm going to tell you what. Bandit hit his birthday. And on his birthday, I was at the first test site to have him take his test. Because I knew he was going to be ready. We had been training to that moment. And, for the next few weeks, we were doing all the tests needed to get him to pass. And he passed with flying colors. And yeah, he's amazing. I'm watching him now.
Now, did you go through a canine good citizenship and temperament? Is that what you did?
Yes, absolutely. We did the canine good citizenship with my friend Jessie, who's also the service dog trainer. So she took us through all that. And she just joked. She's like, "I don't even think he needs it at this point because he's so good." But I think that's haunted me down the road because I compare all my dogs to Bandit. And I love Maverick and Apache, my other dogs. But man, I got to put some work into them.
And he's got that special gift.
Yeah. And, they're born with it. Sometimes you can't make it. Mm. Sometimes they're just born with it. Like I said, from the time we rescued him, I almost feel like it's his way of paying back and giving to us for him being rescued.
What a beautiful story. That's just amazing. And you could, when I met Bandit, I could tell that there was something special about him. Well, first of all, he's a Great Dane. And he walked in to a lunch, it was just this big luncheon that Purina, sponsored. And he was right at our table when we were eating, and he didn't even, my golden retriever would have been on top of the table. But he was very well behaved.
He is amazing. And, I think a lot of people feel that connection. And one thing people say is when they look into Bandit's eyes, they feel like they're looking into an old soul, like someone that understands them, their mm-hmm. pains, what they need. He has it. And I remember that luncheon. That was I love that luncheon. Saw so many of my friends, got to meet you. And we've stayed connected since. But yeah, Purina's been a big part of this journey as well, because I think they've seen what this program has done and they have helped nurture it, grow it, you name it. They're there to help support it any way they can.
So tell us a little bit about that program.
Our USO Therapy Dog program unofficially started probably back in 2011, unofficially, as we were still working out the kinks. And let me tell you, the first day Bandit was an official therapy dog, like I said, I think it was meant to be. I remember coming into the USO, and he has free reign of the USO. He can go wherever he wants in an 18,000 square foot facility, minus the kitchen. He loves just to stand at the door and like, I know I can go in if I want it. No, you can't. And I just, you know, some days at the USO, we can have 700-800 soldiers and service members come in. So it can get, you know, hectic. But this one day, there was a bunch of Marines that showed up. And usually they're very respectful. They always get off their phone when they're checking in. And there was this one young man on his phone. And these other Marines just motioned to me like, ma'am, can you just let him stay on the phone? So I kind of knew something was going on. And I said, absolutely, if you could just sign in for him. And he kept walking forward. Next thing I know, I can't find Bandit. And I look, and all those Marines, there was about 18 of them, they are lined up, circled around something. So I kind of look, and I see the man that was on the phone laying on the ground. And my first thought is, oh my gosh, has he passed out? What's happening? Mm-hmm. But then I notice Bandit's in that circle with him. Bandit is laying on the ground face to face with this young man. And he is just holding on to Bandit, grabbing his head. And, you know, I was like, okay, something's going on. It's okay. I'm going to just let it happen. And let me tell you, it was about 30 minutes later, they dispersed. He's still with Bandit. And then the young man came up to me. He's like, ma'am, I apologize. I just needed to say goodbye. And I said, well, you know, thank you for coming. He's like, no, you don't understand. I was on the phone call with my mother, who just told me my dad passed away. Aww. And I knew he was sick before he had left for boot camp, but his father wanted him to do boot camp no matter what. Just don't stop, keep going, even though it's hard. And he said, I met Bandit's eyes, and it was like I was seeing my dad. And I was seeing my dad through Bandit's eyes, and I was allowed to say goodbye through Bandit's eyes.
Oh,
and I mean, it's giving me chills, making them.
Well, I have chills too.
And I just thought, wow.
Wow.
If he did this on his first official day, what else is he going to be doing?
Yeah.
How do we live up to this? This is, but that just says the type of connection he has. And what else can we do for our military that need it? It's so hard, especially to break down those emotional barriers. And that's what he did in that moment. Mm-hmm. And from there on out, we went full force. Like, how else can we utilize these dogs, not just in our facility? You know, we reached out to the hospital and started working with our military on suicide watch. Mm-hmm. We reached out to different units. And at the time, we had a wounded warrior unit. And they gladly accepted us. And that's where he worked with soldiers and did physical therapy, because he had been trained to be a stability dog. Mm. So those wounded warriors that were learning to walk again could lean on Bandit for support mm-hmm. during therapy. Or even if it was just needing a dog to lean up again mm-hmm. and have that touch of home, we were there. We were able to grow that.
And somehow having a dog around gives people permission to be real.
Absolutely.
If it was another person, there may have been that wall. You know, that's the power of that human-animal connection.
We always say it's about breaking down those emotional and invisible barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it every time.
Ooh, I got that made me a little emotional hearing that. I felt like I was there. So you've had so many wonderful stories, I know, as part of that program. And then you have several Great Danes now, right?
Yes. I guess I lost my mind and got more. Well, we realized with the impact of Bandit, it can't end with Bandit. We can't end anything. We have to keep this going. So this organization in Tennessee reached out to me and said, hey, we follow you guys and we have a litter of blue Great Danes. And of course, you know, that's Bandit's a European blue Great Dane rescue. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, I don't know. Let me think about this. And I think I thought about it for 1 minute. I was like, wait, yeah, yes, yes. An organization called Wagons for Warriors helped out. And that's how Maverick came along.
Okay.
And we used that time to train Maverick because we were getting so busy with Bandit. And as he's aging, it's not fair for him to be on the road each and every day. So that's why we introduced Maverick and started the training to kind of take some of that work off him. Even though if you look at Bandit now, he would probably do it all day long if his body would allow him. Mm-hmm. But with Bandit being a rescue and with so many deformities and he's had 5 surgeries, it's hard on him. So we want to make sure we as the USO are taking care of him and, you know, letting him kind of semi-retire. And now that we've been used to having 2 dogs rotating, doing therapy work. Yeah, I was crazy enough back in March, right before the COVID hit, and rescued another Great Dane out of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Now, this one looks totally different than my blues. Apache is a Fonequin, who they're really not accepted in the Great Dane world yet. Mm-hmm. And he was actually considered not desirable. He wasn't wanted.
Mm.
What a perfect match to take a dog that is not desirable in the Great Dane world, turn him around, train him. And soon, when he hits a year, she is going to be out there doing what Bandit and Maverick do each and every day. And what a better way to show that anyone can do anything. That's you got Bandit who has his own leg deformities and, you know, 2 plates and 20 screws in each leg, who has conquered the world. And now we get to take this dog and show the world that you don't have to be who everyone thinks you have to be. So it was just, and I think the other thing that captured our hearts is Patchy has all these little hearts on him.
Really?
So, yeah, when he was a puppy, I was like, look, there's another heart. There's another heart. So I said he was born to love. So that's what really drew me to him.
How cool. So having 3 Great Danes, I know you're asked this question a lot, but don't they eat a lot?
Oh, man. Yes, and Apache more so than ever, I think. He's only 9 months old and still growing. So my food costs have gone way up. So I go through about a 50-pound bag every 7 to 8 days right now.
Wow.
I thought it was going to go down as Bandit's getting older, but man, it has not. So, you know, on average, Apache can eat about 10 to 11 cups a day. Ooh. Right now during his growth spurt. Maverick will eat as much as you let him. And Bandit's to about 7 to 8 cups a day right now. But yes, I feel like I'm always getting dog food. And I think I get stared at in the store when they see me rolling around with 10 bags of food. But I'm like, I'm getting it all now. So I don't have to go to the store every week.
Well, and I have a golden retriever puppy. He's going to be, I think, 7 months. And
he's adorable. I've been watching videos.
he's a handful at times, but he's really cute. But he only eats maybe only 4 cups a day.
I wish. But that's one of the great things that we have teamed up with Purina. They have helped us tremendously with making sure these dogs are fed and get all their treats they can. They are spoiled.
So they sponsor a part of the program?
They help us, yes. You know, we do programs with them and go out to Purina Farms. And mm-hmm. on certain Saturdays, well, before the pandemic, they actually had reading time where Maverick, people could come out and children could read to Maverick at Purina Farms as a way to get to know some of the programs we do. And so, and they're always so nice about having us out at so many of their events for people to see what we do mm-hmm. and to meet them. And everyone's always astonished by the size of them.
I bet. How much do they weigh?
Bandit is about 195 at last weigh-in. And then Maverick, who just hit 4 years old, is 220 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And then Apache just turned 9 months old last week. And at his checkup at 8 months old, he was 156 pounds. he has quite a bit of growing. They estimate that Apache will get to be about 220 to 230 pounds.
Wow.
Wow. But he is already, I'm sure you've seen pictures, mm-hmm. he's already about 3 inches taller than Maverick. He already mm-hmm. towers over both of them. He's nothing but legs.
And he's a handful because he's a puppy, too.
Yes, I forgot that stage. Mm-hmm. He's giving me a run for the money, but the one thing COVID has done is give me that extra time to work with him. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll spend my days at the USO at Fort Leonard Wood just walking around and training him. And it's given me that time I've needed. Unfortunately, it's not given me all that time I would love with him surrounded by hundreds of troops. But I think he's going to make it. He'll make it.
It's a step-by-step process. You're giving him good socialization.
Absolutely. I'm trying to take him anywhere I can safely, especially when it comes to the socialization. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that Lowe's and St. Robert allows us to bring him in. They're usually dog-friendly in most cities. So I've been doing a lot of socialization there. There's a lot of wounded warriors that actually work at our Lowe's. So they absolutely love seeing him. And they can't wait. And we have one who's a double amputee in a wheelchair that says, all right, I'm ready for you. And he Very works cool. with Apache a lot. So I'm trying to use the community. It's not just me doing it. It's the community helping me with Apache for sure.
That's awesome. Now with Bandit, I remember you had all these little tags on him.
Yes. Those? His vest. Mm-hmm. He wears his vest. And it's just to let people know he is a therapy dog. But when we started, there was a few soldiers that just absolutely loved him, and they tore off their unit patch that was on their uniform and gave it to me. I said, well, what is this for? He's like, well, this is for Bandit. Can you put it on the vest? And at the time, I had no intention of putting anything on the vest, but it just grew. So all those trinkets or pins or patches uh-huh. you see are actually from service members he's worked with around the world that have torn them off their uniform or their pin to present to Bandit or Maverick, wow. whoever it is, as like their token of thanks. So Bandit has 6 vests currently, and he probably could have more. and then Maverick is on his 3rd right now. So Apache has a lot of paws to fill, big shoes to fill.
That's very cool. And that means a lot, I know.
It does. You know, it's one thing. As soon as you take that vest out of the closet, they are up and out the door waiting for you to put it on. And I feel sorry for those times I'm just moving stuff around and they see that. I'm like, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just organizing. But even Bandit, as old as he is, he's going to be 10 this year. And that's huge for a Great Dane. I pull out that vest and he is on point, ready. You know, these dogs right now are running around playing, but that's them. You know, we want them to be a dog too. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you bring out that vest, and I'm sure you know the same mm-hmm. thing, they know that's when they know I got to go to work.
Totally agree. I had a golden retriever that I was really concerned if he would make it as a therapy dog. And he was a wonderful therapy dog to come to a children's home. And he would be running around and I'd think, oh my gosh, can I take him to this children's home? Because I don't want him to like be a little bit too active with them. But I took out the vest and he just turned into a different dog and he was just really mellow with them. Amazing how that happens.
Yeah. And it's amazing the tools that are in place to let them know that. And it's all part mm-hmm. of the training. And I don't even think I trained that. It's just they started to learn it. And mm-hmm. Yeah. They knew, though, when I took it off, there's sometimes I take it off at USO just to let them run around when no one else is there mm-hmm. and you bring it back out. And you're right. It's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. You have gone all over the world with your dogs and you mentioned something about focusing on military wellness and bringing families together. What was that about?
A lot of our programs that we do are about bringing those families together and giving them that support system. And it can be anything from traveling to the East Coast. We work a lot with Arlington Cemetery, and it's one of the saddest times in a family's life. But imagine a family with a young child not understanding what's going on, you know, burying their father, their mother, their brother, their sister, mm-hmm. and not really understanding what's going on. And sometimes the parent is distracted. So we thought, what if Bandit can help? So imagine being a 7 or 8 year old kid next to this 200-pound Great Dane mm-hmm. and during the burial. And it was just meant for them to lean on, something to lean on, to support. And Bandit will sit next to the children. You know, he escorts the children to the burial of their parents at Arlington Cemetery. And we've had so much feedback from that. Like, you know, we knew the USO was there for us. I didn't have to worry about my child during such a difficult time. And to look over and just have that child leaning against Bandit was amazing.
Wow.
You know, they didn't understand it. And we've continued that with Maverick. But unfortunately, the one thing Maverick, I will say, he has his faults. He's not big into noise. So Bandit can sit and not even flinch during a gun salute during a burial. Maverick, on the other hand, you've probably seen me on the news where I was running all over Arlington to catch him, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's loud. That's
really exactly. Loud. So how do you take someone's weaknesses and make it into something that works? Because not mm-hmm. everyone can do everything the same way. So that's when we thought, well, if you can't do a burial, why not escort the children back to the burial sites, even if it's a year or two later? And I'm going to tell you, I think we get more requests from that than the actual burials. Mm. So Maverick will actually escort them back to the burial site, and he'll sit with them and lay next to them as that child writes a letter to their fallen parent or brother wow. or sister. And just even, we've even had a couple fall asleep with him out there. But again, I think everyone asks, why do you guys do such big dogs? A lot of it is about that. Having mm-hmm. that wall to lean on to feel safe. And I'm not saying smaller dogs can't do it. They can. There's been some mm-hmm. incredible dogs. But it's just something about having that strength next to you that works.
For people of all sizes.
Of
you know?
All sizes as yes. well. It's so cute and touching to be walking through Arlington. And I always have a leash, you know, on them, of course, but we also click on a special leash for them to hold on to. So it's so funny to see the smiles on these children's faces when they think they're leading this 200-pound dog, not knowing I actually have another leash. But yeah, it's bringing them together, you know, through the hard times, but also having them available during the good times too, during reunions. You know, working with our local Wounded Warrior programs here, it's all how can we use them to bring them together? How can we use them to help with their reading? It's hard to say right now with COVID, but usually you would find Maverick in the schools all year round. Mm-hmm. And we would be in the library and teachers would all decide who needs help with their reading. Who is a little mm-hmm. shy to read in front of their classes? You know, how many people are afraid to speak up in front of their own classmates? Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's something going on at home. Maybe their parent is deployed. Maybe they're going through a separation. So they always pinpoint children that might just need a little bit extra support, or maybe they just need that pat on the back to make them feel special. Mm-hmm. So when they realize they're picked to go spend time with Maverick in the library, they light up. And so we are in the library and they just read as long as you'll let them. And it's so funny because Maverick always looks like he's paying attention to them. And it's just so funny to see these anywhere from kindergartners up to fourth, fifth graders reading to him. But it doesn't even stop there. We've even had requests from the high schoolers where they just, and we have them in the hallways just for them. It kind of mm-hmm. brings down those stresses that they mm-hmm. all have. So it's made it hard during COVID. But we're actually doing a lot of Zoom meeting with a lot of the children. So the next week I have about 6 Zoom calls set up with the elementary school for the different classes to read to Maverick.
Wow.
And they're so excited because they take it serious. They want to know, like, they want to read and pick a book that Maverick's going to enjoy.
Or, how cute.
Or it's even funny. Some of them know, you know, Maverick's disabilities. So they'll try to find a special book about disabilities. And I love it. I'm glad that we can make them smile and look forward to something in their day.
Well, and as you're talking about all of these just beautiful stories, Kelly, it really is about taking something, loving it, caring for it, using its innate gifts, despite anything that anybody is saying about them, you know, disability wise or color of their skin or their fur, whatever that is. There's so many life lessons that can be learned, you know, just from the stories that you shared.
Absolutely. And I think that's why we share these dogs with so many, is so that people know you don't have to be perfect to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, there you can take your disabilities and use them for the for good. I can't tell you how many wounded warriors have leaned on Bandit, even when we're at Walter Reed working with amputees, or even here locally in or in St. Louis. They see those deformities in his legs, you know, his paws bow out. He has probably a 10-inch scar on each back leg. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I've just seen a soldier put his hand over those scars or hold his paw. They will say, if he can do it, I can do it. And they almost use Bandit as that strength. Like, he's doing this great work, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. And so I think showing people that you don't have to be perfect to do it, do anything in life. It doesn't have to be dog related. It's just take those skills. You know, I remember as a child, I was actually part of the stuff at Special Olympics at the time, because I had delayed speech, delayed hearing, and I never, you know, let that put me down. You know, I remember times where family was like, you know, you don't need to tell anyone you were part of the Special Olympics. I said, why? Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that time, or I was in those special programs, but look where it's brought me. So I, you know, sometimes Bandit and I and Maverick will meet with the Special Olympic groups, and I tell them, I was where you were. Don't let it hold you back. Use that, you know, those strengths and keep going.
Well, and dogs don't have the same limiting beliefs that people sometimes inflict upon themselves, right?
Absolutely.
They just do it. They just do it. And you all, you'd also said, too, that you embrace the value of teamwork, so that your success is really due to working together as a team.
Absolutely. You know, there's no I in team. And I'm a big firm believer of that. And the USO of Missouri encompasses that. And like I said, it was our executive director that said, go for it. Take this. Show me what you can do. Let's see if we can actually make it a program. But it wasn't just me. It took the volunteers. It took our, my other coworkers coming together to help. And we do that with all our programs. It's never just one person. It might be one person leading it at first, but it's all of us. It takes all of us to execute it, figure it out. What do we do? What can we do better? And I think that's why I love being part of the USO of Missouri, is because they let us think outside the box. Obviously, as much as craziness as we have down here of thinking outside of the box, but I have such an amazing team in place that I know I can rely on them anytime I need to. Or like when we go on those East Coast tours, it's usually just me and one dog. And I have to be okay with leaving Fort Leonard Wood behind for a couple weeks and know that it will be okay. Again, that's all about teamwork. I know it's going to be in good hands and there's a wonderful team in place, but I think it's years of building that. I've been with the USO now going on 12 years in March. Our operations coordinator I work with has been going on 10 years soon. And then we have one more that's been there a couple of years. So I think it's also understanding your teammates' strengths as well.
And playing to those strengths, right?
Yes.
Not just focusing on the things that need to be improved, because we already know those things. As humans, we know those things, but we don't very often focus on our strengths.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we got to focus on those strengths, but also look at the weaknesses. And I might be weak in one thing, but a teammate be stronger, and it's working together to make it work.
Mm-hmm. So what's changed in how you do things because of the pandemic? Do you have you had to make any changes?
There's been several changes. Currently, our Fort Leonard Wood USO is still shut down, but we're still in there each and every day. The garrison commander still hasn't given us the okay to open up. But it's okay, because right now we are supplying all of our military in quarantine and isolation with all the products they need, all the hygiene products. Mm-hmm. But one thing that has changed is our dogs miss our people. So like I was telling you earlier, you know, we've been setting up Zoom meetings with the children. Mm-hmm. And there has been some military reach out. You know, we work a lot with the military police to do impact statements sometimes, or if there's a difficult case. Or even some of the military counselors will come in and they'll just call and we'll set up a private time for them to come to the USO, just them and the dog. So that, and they usually just ask to have the dog there just to meet with their patient and put that patient at ease. So it's not as active as we remember it right now. I'm used to having 700 to 900 soldiers in the facility.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, so it's quiet.
That's huge.
It's too quiet. So I feel like I hear everything now. Like, did something just drop? Did something? And then, you know, it's usually the dogs running around. But we're making it work. We're serving safely how we can, doing programs outside with the approval from POST, just, you know, making sure we're social distancing. Our St. Louis USO is open, located in Lambert. They were used to being open 24/7, but right now with the pandemic, it's Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 4:30 currently. And they are executing their own programs right now to make sure we are serving the needs of our service members. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a wonderful job. People reach out and we don't say no. We say, how can we make this happen and make it happen safely? There's a lot that's needed by the military right now. And I think sometimes they're used to running into that brick wall. So it's nice to work for an organization that doesn't, I'm not going to say we don't say no. There are some things we can't do, but we take it. And so how can we do it and how can we do it safely so that they're still getting served?
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, and we've all had to adapt, right? It's not the most ideal situation, but it's what we've got. So.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have done so much with your dogs and really improved the quality of so many lives. Is there anything else that you'd like to share about the work you've done?
No, I've just been honored to do the work that I do. I'm so pleased that the USO Missouri has allowed me to take some of my passions and incorporate it into work. And I don't even call the USO work. The USO is my passion. I love to serve. You know, I have a place in my heart for the military. So taking those things that you loved, even as a child, that you forgot about, not that I forgot about the dogs or my love for animals, because I've always had animals, but sometimes you don't have to give up on your passions. Find a way to incorporate your passions into what you do into everyday life. If it's not work, working with great organizations out there to incorporate your passions. I think, again, as we said earlier, don't be afraid to take a leap, because it takes a leap sometimes to do a lot that we want to do.
You're totally right. And it's so scary. I've done that before, too. I left a position I had for, well, it wasn't just one position, but a healthcare organization. I was there for over 25 years. That's unheard of these days.
Wow.
But I took a leap not too long ago, several years ago, and launched out and started my own business. There's a huge learning curve with that. And then I did the veterinary social work program. And so I combined my passion with my private practice. So,
and I can tell you from what I see on your social media, you are doing an amazing job at it.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. But again, it's just exactly what you said. It's combining your passion with your work. So work isn't work so much, right? It doesn't seem like that.
Absolutely. And every once in a while, it can be distracting. We do joke about that. But, you know, it's funny when you're sitting at your desk trying to get a report done and this huge great dane comes up behind you and just lays his head on you. Like, do I keep working or do I go ahead and pet you? You know, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, they give you the eyes, right?
And you can't. Eyes.
So if anybody wants any more information about the work that you do or the USO, how can they contact you?
Contact me several different ways. They can reach out via email. My email is kbrownfield@usomissouri.org. Or, you know, they're more than welcome to reach out and call at 573-433-5860. Or you can even reach out to our website, which is www.usomissouri.org.
And all of that will be in the show notes. So,
perfect.
Yeah, it's all going to be there.
And then don't forget, if they want to follow their journeys, they can also look us up on Facebook at Bandits Brigade, The Legacy Continues, or of course, our USO Facebook, which is USO Missouri Inc. Fort Leonard Wood.
Beautiful. And there's some great pictures of Bandit with the military guys.
Oh, so many. And then as you'll learn, Bandit also, you'll have to see Facebook though to see it, has a connection with his own cat. Yes, he has his own cat as well.
Well, I need to make a correction. It's not just guys, it's women too. But the pictures that I've seen are specifically with these big men just kind of like hugging on him. And so it made such an impact.
It is always amazing. You'll see the biggest, burliest man come in, and he just melts when he sees the dogs. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or it's so funny, you'll have the tiniest person next to this Great Dane that's twice their size, just want to get a hug. And Bandit can't give people hugs like jumping up because of his back legs. But Maverick was trained to do those hugs only when you mm-hmm. ask. And I tell you, all day long at the USO, you just see people doing the motion for him to give a hug, and they just love it. It makes their day.
Yeah, I bet it does. So Kelly, you provide such a valuable service, and I want to thank you for the work you do to help our military and their families. And I have really enjoyed our conversation today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I was so excited and looking forward to this. So amazing to catch up and share everything we do with the USO with all your followers. So I absolutely appreciate allowing me to do this.
Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing more later about the exciting work that you continue to do in the world.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed my interview with Kelly Brownfield. I met Kelly several years ago when she brought her Great Dane to a lunch program for local animal rescue organizations. I was impressed that her dog Bandit didn't grab any of the food off of the table, since he was as big as many of the people. When I first started this podcast, I asked Kelly if she would be a guest, since I knew she had an important story to tell. And what a story it is. It's a story that exemplifies so many life lessons and how to change obstacles and adversities into life-changing experiences. Kelly grew up in a military family and had to adapt to constant changes and living overseas. But Kelly turned these challenges into adventure. During this episode, Kelly shared how taking a risk to move out of state, then adopting a rescue dog, changed not only her life, but also saved this special dog's life. Kelly and her dog, Bandit, started a legacy, a journey together, that ended up making a difference in so many other people's lives. She also turned her passion into something that gave her life purpose and meaning. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed speaking with Kelly. Please share your stories about how animals have touched or changed your life. You can send me an email. I would love to hear your story. I'm also excited about some upcoming episodes where I will have other guests who share their stories about the importance of the human-animal connection. Thank you for listening. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Animal Academy podcast. Detailed contact information and links for each of the guests and resources provided inside this episode can be found at my website, animalacademypodcast.com. I'm Allison White, licensed clinical social worker specializing in the human-animal connection. Let's share and learn from the animals in the next episode of the Animal Academy podcast.